This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for KnowHow is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of KnowHow is brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost, automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit wealthfront.com/knowhow and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's wealthfront.com/knowhow. And by DigitalOcean. Simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code KNOWHOW in the billing section to get your $10 credit. On today's show,
you'll know how to get your FPV 150 in the air.
The know-how. It's the Twitch show where we build, ban, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next 30 to 45 minutes, we're going to be showing you one of the projects that we've been geeking out so you can take it home and fly away on your own.
Yeah, you know, I don't really know if that's going to happen or not, though. There's a lot of pieces on the desk, but
yeah.
I actually haven't seen any of this in the air yet.
And you might not. It's a bit more complicated build because I've never done a build like this where I'm deliberately making it more difficult than it needs to be.
That sounds like something you do on every episode, though.
Well, difficult for you, but that's just for chuckles.
Ouch.
This is more difficult for me because it doesn't need to be this complicated. Like, I can remove another 30 grams from this craft. I could make the wiring so much easier. Instead of this harness, I could make it just one wire. But what I wanted to do is, and we talked about this, we wanted to make the FPV 150 accessible to those who have been building the craft we've already done on KnowHow. So if you did the original FPV 250,
right,
if you did the KnowHow 250, if you did the Alien X, we wanted you to be able to use the same hardware that you've purchased, especially the radio, the transmitter and receiver.
Right, because is it PWM that you need to have to be able to fly it? Or
yeah, so what I would normally do on a 150 is I would use a PPM enabled receiver, because I could do one wire. So one wire transmits all the signals for all the different channels.
Right.
But PWM, which is what the, you know, the less expensive, the FlySky, remember the original transmitter that we used?
Yes,
that's
the one that
all
I have.
PWM, yeah. Now, you could use a PWM to PPM encoder, and we talked about that in the last episode. Yeah, you could buy one of those.
Yeah.
But it adds weight, and then you still have all the cables there.
Right.
So, yeah. I wanted to do a slightly easier way to get it all inside of the frame, at the same time keeping the weight down, at the same time not having to shell out, you know, $300 for a new radio system.
Right, which is kind of a large investment if this was going to be your first project. And if you've been following along, it definitely helps.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I will say, remember, we tried to make this project really flexible. That's why I didn't tell people what kind of flight controller to buy. You could use a KK, you could use a CCD, you could use what I'm using, which is a Flip 32, which I really, really like. It's right, more advanced flight controller. In fact, this does have the ability to hook up directly to this receiver with one wire. I'm just not doing it because, no. The other cool thing that this receiver will do, this flight controller will do, is it will send telemetry back to this radio, which will give me telemetry on my radio.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so that's a future upgrade.
Yeah, because you've used that. Have you used this board for anything other than flying quads? Because it's got quite a few little sensors and stuff on.
Yeah, I mean, I've used it to make a gimbal.
I've used it
to make sort of a self-leveling platform. Anything that requires PWM output to stabilize something,
right,
that's actually very good for it.
No, that's cool.
Nice piece of kit.
And so how close, with all this added stuff, this complication that you've done, are we getting pretty close to our 250-gram limits?
Yes. So when I added on all the FPV gear, and then I had to take it off because that's for next week's episode.
Right.
With everything that I want, which includes the wireless Bluetooth transmitter so that I can do configuration without ever having to plug something into it.
I like that.
Along with the little 3D printed stand for my antennas because I want to get them out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
We are at 245 grams. So we're right under that line.
Okay. Jeez.
Yeah. Now that's 245 grams.
With the battery?
With this battery. With the larger battery. If I went with this battery, I'd be about 50 grams under.
But then what would your flight time be limited to?
Flight time would go down. But this is still a good choice. The 500 milliamp hour battery is still a good choice if you just want to like bomb around. You want to go crazy fast.
Right.
Because this may last longer in the air, but it's heavier. So.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think the perfect option for me would be use the first, the big battery first and warm up, and then use the, battery once I've got the hang of it.
Once you're ready to crash.
Yeah, exactly. Once I'm ready to just destroy it.
Yeah, exactly. Now, folks, let's not mince any more words. Let's go ahead and show you how FPV 150 comes together.
Previously in Project FPV 150, we assembled our frame, mounted our motors, ESCs, and power system, removed as much wire as possible to save weight, and set the proper motor rotation. This week, we'll be installing the flight controller and receiver. For this part of the build, you'll need a soldering kit with a fine tip, snips and strips, a small flat screwdriver, a flight controller, receiver, 2.5 inches of 2-inch heat shrink tubing, 30-gauge silicone wire, and a pair of receiver leads, preferably the separated type. Let's start with the flight systems. We have three unique challenges in this build. First, weight. Second, power, and third, cable management. Whatever flight controller you choose needs to fit in a 35mm square mounting space and weigh as little as possible. For our project, I'm using a Flip 32 running base flight firmware, weighing just 5 grams, but you can use any controller you want. If you've got a PPM-capable receiver, I suggest you use a PPM-capable flight controller. In fact, there is a mode to use single-wire connectivity between my X8R receiver and the Flip 32. But since this build is for those who may have already invested in PWM receivers during our previous builds, I'm using the receiver and flight controller's PWM mode and wiring it the hard way. The second challenge is power. Because we're using ESCs without battery eliminator circuits, we need an alternate way of providing clean 5-volt power to our flight controller, which will in turn provide power to our receiver. Luckily, our power distribution board has a 5-volt BEC that we can tap. We'll need about 2 inches of 30-gauge red and black silicone wire. Strip and tin your ends, then solder one side of each to the 5-volt pads on the power distribution board, red to positive, black to ground. The third challenge is cable management. The inside of the FPV 150 is going to be very cramped, so cramped that traditional pin and connector setups just won't do. Straight up, there wouldn't be any room for the connectors. Angled to the side, the connectors are uncomfortably close to the props. So we're going to skip the installation of our connectors and solder directly to the flight controller. This does mean that it won't be easy to service the craft, but it's better for cable management and it can save up to 10 grams of weight from the removal of pins, connectors, and wire. Assuming that you followed our tutorial on using an Arduino to set motor rotation, you should be ready to permanently connect the ESCs to your flight controller. Measure out your ESC signal leads to their appropriate places on the flight controller, making sure to leave enough slack to let wires move without straining. Also, if you're new to soldering, you want a little extra service loop so that you can make a few mistakes without having to rerun your leads. Once you've got a length that's comfortable for you, cut, strip, and tin your leads. Okay, this is important, and it will keep you from having to do a lot of trial and error soldering. You need to read the manual for whatever flight controller you're using to find out exactly which through holes are used for which motors and which through holes are for ground, voltage, and signal. For our Flip 32, the fore left arm is motor 4 and goes into the third down from the top. The forward right arm is motor 2 and goes into the second up from the bottom. The rear left arm is number 3 and goes into the third up from the bottom. And the rear right is number 1 and goes into the bottommost set. Also, the outmost through holes are ground, the inner hole is 5-volt power, and the innermost hole is signal. Once you've mapped your connections, it's time to solder. Signal wire to the inner hole of the appropriate set and black wire to ground. Remember, these ESCs don't have a BEC. I want to keep my installation as neat as possible, so I'm inserting the leads from the underside of the controller and soldering up top. Make sure to apply heat to the pad, not the wire, and let the solder flow. Remember not to apply heat for more than a few seconds at a time, as excess heat can destroy the board. Once you're done with the ESC leads, solder the 30-gauge leads from the power distribution board to one set of ground and voltage leads on the ESC side of the flight controller. Once again, remember that the ground lead is the through hole to the outside of the board, and the 5-volt lead is in the middle. Double and triple check your work. Look for loose or cold solder joints, solder bridges, and stray bits of slag. Flip the controller over a few times to make sure you've soldered ground and signal to the right through holes. If you've got one, use a multimeter to test for shorts. If you're satisfied that it's all correct, connect power to your craft, and you should see the power indicator on your flight controller.
Before you start, yes, that soldering job was atrocious. It was bad. It was bad. I was tired. I just had to get it done.
I understand.
Smitty, don't. No one show that to Smitty, please.
Yeah, I hope he wasn't watching that.
I did fix it. So later on, I did fix it when I clipped down. But yeah, it was. Yes. I mean, if you look overhead, if you go over the overhead, so that's the finish. The finish job is actually pretty good.
It's hard to tell on the camera.
It's hard to tell that I really botched it.
Yeah, they look less like malformed Hershey Kisses now.
Yeah, folks, so that's what happens when you don't solder properly. Okay, so what we've done so far is we've gotten this all together so that we now have the flight controller and the power distribution unit, right. And we've got the ESCs soldered directly into the flight controller. Now, remember, I'm going to bring this up several times because it's an important point. Mm-hmm. Because we're not using pins, it does reduce weight, but it also means if something happens, I have to desolder or I have to cut wires.
Yeah, so you're foregoing the ability of having modular to make it save weight. Yeah. But we are getting really close to that limit.
We're getting close to the limit. And, you know, when you make a large craft, you have a lot of extra
space.
Thrust just to play with. So, like, for example, when we made the Alien X, we deliberately did some things that weighed more just because we wanted a more robust frame or because we wanted it to be easier to service. So we did things like adding the interchangeable bullet connectors so we could pull out ESCs that have blown out. This is an integrated package. This is more like a sports car. So everything has been done to save weight, even if it means in the future it's going to be hard to service.
Yeah, because the 450 definitely had crumple zones where the arms would shatter before the rest of the frame, which was fine because you could switch out the arm super easy. But fortunately, this little craft probably won't be snapping arms because it doesn't have as much weight, so not as much inertia to break
things. I've crashed this a few times already.
Yeah.
And once off the third story of a building, so it's done okay. It's pretty secure.
Nice.
I have had to replace the arm once. I broke one arm.
And then, so how long did that take you to replace?
Not bad because I'm actually okay with soldering. But you might not be, so just don't do that on purpose.
Well, like with the 450, when I broke the arm on that, I was able to field repair it with zip ties and duct tape.
Don't do that.
I don't know if that would work on this.
That's such a bad idea, because imagine if that arm comes off mid-flight, now you've got an uncontrolled...
Right. Then it destroys itself.
And people around it.
That's true. Yeah, so that's why I only fly in empty fields.
Folks, friends, don't let friends kill each other with quadcopters. Okay, now when we come back, we do have to do some tuning. We're going to hook this up to the computer, and I'm going to show you what you can do with the firmware that's on there. That's actually called BaseFlight. Mm-hmm. It's one of the two firmwares that I prefer. I like CleanFlight and BaseFlight. We're going to show you some of the features that are built into this Chrome plugin. I think you're going to like it. But before we do that, you know what I want to do?
What's that?
I want to talk about money.
Saving money?
Saving money. Specifically, saving money up. Now, if you are a Gen Xer, if you're a millennial, if you're a baby boomer, heck, if you're even younger than that, at some point you need to start figuring out how you're going to live later on in your life. You're going to have to figure out how you make your money work for you rather than working for your money. Now, you could do it the traditional way. The traditional way would be to go to a broker, go to an investor, right, who will take your money and fold it into some sort of mutual account, maybe combine it with some other monies that he has under his management. And then he or she will charge you ridiculous fees, 3% of your money just to take care of it. And then they're also going to charge you every single time you try to move it from one interaction to another. And most of those funds are not the best with transparency. You might get a quarterly statement, but if you wanted sort of real-time analysis of how your money's doing, that's not how they're set up, which is why we're lucky to have Wealthfront as a sponsor of Know How. Now, Wealthfront is a different way to invest your money. It's efficient. It really works for you. You get to set up what kind of investment do you want. Do you want a rich tax strategy so that you're not getting hit with that major penalty at the end of the year? Do you want a retirement account? Do you want high risk to see how fast you can push your investment? Well, with Wealthfront, you can do that. But here's what I love about it. It's not some guy who's maybe got a couple of conflicts of interest when he's investing your money. It's a cold, hard algorithm. It's the new way to invest. And the best thing about it is that it's all transparent. You can log into your Wealthfront account at any time and see exactly how your money is working. But let's talk about some of the brass tacks here. While I said that traditional advisors might charge you between 1% and 3% of what they manage, with Wealthfront, you pay 1/4 of 1% a year. That's 25 basis points. Zero commissions and no hidden fees. That's less than $5 a month to invest a $30,000 in account. And there are no additional charges for any of Wealthfront's services. You can also get started with as little as $500. You might think you need a lot of money. No. Try it out. Throw $500 in and see what Wealthfront can do with that small investment. It only takes a few minutes to sign up at Wealthfront.com, and it goes right to work, monitoring your portfolios around the clock and taking actions as soon as an opportunity arises. Wealthfront uses modern portfolio theory, you can look that up, to determine the optimal mix of asset classes with the aid of mean variance optimization, that's MVO. This methodology allows them to generate the maximum return for every level of risk. Wealthfront is, again, transparent and accessible, so you're never going to have to worry about whether your money is doing well. You could just log in on your phone, on your tablet, on your desktop and see. And unlike other financial advisors, Wealthfront will bog you down with dozens of questions. They've combed through behavioral analysis to simplify the risk identification process, which allows you to begin investing sooner. Did you know that more than 90% of portfolios aren't invested the right way for the long term? We want that to stop, and we want it to stop with Wealthfront. With their new portfolio review, you can see if your portfolio is at risk, how diversified your investments are, what you are losing to fees, even minimize your taxes, all for free. And it will help you to decide to move your money to Wealthfront. With over $2.6 billion in client assets today and growing rapidly, you kind of want to get in at the front of the train. Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to visit Wealthfront.com/knowhow to sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio. You'll see the customized allocation they recommend for your profile. And just for TWIT listeners, if you sign up to invest, Wealthfront will manage your first $15,000 entirely free of charge for life. Join the many TWIT fans who have seen huge success with Wealthfront and claim your offer today at Wealthfront.com/knowhow. That's Wealthfront.com/knowhow. Do it today. Invest smart. Invest with Wealthfront. And we thank Wealthfront for their support of Knowhow. All right, Brian, you ready to get closer to airtime with our FPV 150?
Yes, please. That's what I've been waiting for.
All right, so here's what we need to do. We need to start setting up. The hardware is in place. We've more or less got everything tacked down the way we want it. We've got those horrible solder joints, which I did fix later on. I know there are people in the chat room right now who are going, that's
you
did
cool
bad and you should feel
joint.
Bad.
Yeah, right?
It was.
And you did.
That's
why you fixed it.
I fixed it. But we're going to jump into something called Baselight. So if you go to my computer here, Alex... There we go. So this is actually an app that is inside Google Chrome. So you can just get it from the App Store. It's called CleanFlight and Baselight. These are the two that I like. I'm actually using Baselight on this Flip 32 flight controller. So when I open it up, it's going to start up a little application. You can go ahead and zoom in on that, Alex, because that's about as big as it's going to get. This allows me to configure my flight controller. So what I'm going to do, if you go to the overhead, there is a USB connector here that I just take a micro USB cable to and I plug it in, and now it will give me the little light up. I'm also going to hook up a battery because I do want power to the ESCs so that I can show you some of the cool things you can do with this flight controller.
Nice.
Wait. There we go. Now it's happy. All right, now go back to my computer, and you'll see it's now connected. And we saw a screen like this last year, actually maybe 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is a much more advanced screen. So this is showing you what the sensors are doing. So right now I'm nose down, nose up, left, right, rolling, pitching. And you'll notice how it's solid. It's solid. And the reason why it's solid is because the first thing I did was I calibrated this. I calibrated the accelerometer and I calibrated the magnetometer. The accelerometer is really easy. You just put it down, don't touch it, make sure it's on a solid table, and you click calibrate. What it will do is it will run through a little routine and make sure that it's zeroed out any motion or any tilt. This is going to be my new normal for the flight controller. This is important because this will allow the flight controller to balance me when I'm in the air.
Do you need to worry about it being a completely flat surface?
Like, yes.
So you want to like level it out, make sure
you're... Well, I mean, leveling out is a little crazy, but don't put it on like that old rickety desk.
Yeah, don't put it on a slant.
Okay. Yeah, if it's at a 45-degree angle and you calibrate,
it
will think that's normal.
Okay.
And obviously, that's not. So don't do that. The other thing here is you want to calibrate the magnetometer. I'm not going to do it here because it is a lengthy process. But essentially, you would click calibrate, and then you would turn this 360 degrees in every axis. So there's three axes, right? There's this, there's that, and there's that.
And you're holding it out.
And you just rotate it. And you have to do it all within 30 seconds. And what you're doing is you're allowing the magnetometer to see what 360 degrees in every axis actually looks like.
Did that take you a few tries to get right?
Yeah, it totally did. And the other problem is because there is a USB cable here, you kind of have a cable getting in the way, which is why in one of the future mods, I'm actually adding a Bluetooth module, so that process will be completely wireless.
That would make it a lot easier.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, now let's mess around. So those are the parts I have to do.
Right.
If I don't do that...
It won't fly.
Well, it will fly.
It
won't fly well. But that's not all that this app is good for. If you go back to my screen, you'll notice this. This is something that people asked for after the last episode. They wanted to know if there was an easier way for them to spin up their motors. Yes, there is. Hmm. This actually lets you control all of the ESCs from this control panel. So I have to enable it. This is why our props are off. Okay. Anytime we're messing around with the firmware, anytime we have power connected, the props are off. Because I can do this. So I'm going to go ahead and bring up the master switch, and it will bring up all four of my motors.
Nice. It looks like there's an option for if you wanted to do an octocopter.
Right, exactly. And also, I can bring up individual motors. So if I just want to make sure I'm spinning up the right motor, if I want to make sure that particular motor is going in the right direction.
I like that.
I don't have the ability here to switch motor rotation, so I still have to use the Blue Heli Suite to do that.
Okay.
But this is a really good way. Like, if you're troubleshooting and you're not sure why something's not working, put it in here and see what it does as you throw a couple of commands at the ESCs. What you'll find sometimes is that an ESC that's damaged, like the startup, doesn't happen right away. Like as I bring up all four of the motors,
it might hesitate.
Yeah, you'll see one motor that doesn't quite spin up, and it's like, okay, either that's a bad calibration or the ESC has just gone bad.
Have you ever had a ESC just go bad, or
yes. You
just like
no
didn't
crash damage?
It just went
wrong.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, but what the funny part was, I was able to fix it just by reloading the firmware.
Weird. So it's like the firmware
itself.
Got corrupted.
Yeah. If I had thought about it, I would have probably saved it and tried to decompile what happened to the firmware. Because it was working, it just wasn't working the way it was supposed to. So the only thing I can think of is somehow it like configured itself.
Right. Yeah. You had static electricity when you touched it. And
it was alive.
The drone has become self-aware.
Rise of the drones. Okay, so that's one of the other things. Now, you're going to see us play with these other modes as well. I can hook a GPS up to this board. It does have the headers.
That is so cool that all this stuff is integrated in this little board.
Exactly. But what I really like is this. So I can turn on logging. And what it will do is it will keep all of the data from the onboard sensors. So
how much memory can even be on that thing?
Well, I mean, I can use an extra module, like a little black box, if I want to.
To download all that? That's
which
awesome.
Is cool because you could play it back, and it will show you where were your throttle positions.
Right.
Were you hard over? What were the sensors feeling? It's a really nice way to deconstruct a flight.
Yeah.
You're going to see this more because there's these racing FPV leagues, and that black box information is fantastic because you get to see how pilots fly. And you go, oh, he powers into the turn. I always thought you had to reduce power. That's going to be kind of fun.
And now I'm wondering if they can autonomize, the drone, use the same input pattern and then just plug that into a drone to do, like, the laps over and over and over.
Yeah,
and then
exactly. We'll see. Now, folks, there are people in the chat room asking if there are links to this. You don't need a link. All you have to do is go to the Google App Store. See, I mean, if you have Chrome, if you actually, Alex.
Which everyone should be able to get
Alex,
Chrome.
If you could go to the, there you go. So if you go to the App Store, just look for Baseflight. And it will install itself. These are some of the apps that I have on it. It does require Google Chrome, so you can't just download that app and run it. There's like the MultiWii software that we used to use, but that's way outdated. One of these.
Okay. That doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah. Now, the other modes that we're going to be playing with in just a bit are these. So we can play with the receiver. We're going to have to make sure that our receiver is dialed in, that we're sending the right inputs. We're also going to do this. We're going to play with mode selection because we want to be able to control what the individual switches on our transmitter will do. This is where I tell it, okay, arm yourself, disarm yourself, go into acro mode, go into angle mode. And then this is the bane of my existence. PID. We've talked about PID. This is how you dial in your quadcopter, your multirotor. You can set all the parameters for how it accelerates, how it goes up, how it comes down.
Right.
I have been playing with these for 2 years now, and I've talked to some experts, and I've heard every different theory about how PIDs get dialed in. So basically, it's trial and error for me.
Okay, yay. So if you are testing your quad, do you take your laptop out to the field with you and then, like,
yep,
try it? It's like, I don't like that setting. Plug it back in, change some stuff.
And again, that's why I'm adding the Bluetooth module, because I don't want to have to plug it in. And the other cool thing about the Bluetooth module is you can actually run this app on a phone.
Nice.
So you don't even have to bring a laptop. But you are going to have to dial this in. And that's one of the reasons why I kind of like those KK boards, because the screen is right there and you've got it on screen. But we can't spare the weight, so.
Yeah. No. And so the Bluetooth module, is that going to add very much weight or take up much
space?
It's
going to add about 3 grams.
So not too bad.
Yeah. The total weight, with including that, was about 245 grams. So okay. I'm still 5 grams under the FAA limit. And I think it's worth it. The utility is worth it. What I was thinking about doing is maybe making it so I can disconnect the Bluetooth module.
Yeah, make it modular.
But I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see where we get.
Yeah. So what we need now is we need to hook up the receiver. But just like we did with the ESCs, we are not going to put pins, because pins add weight.
Right.
And pins also don't fit really well inside this chassis. So the next step is going to show you how to do that. But you know what? Before we do that, Brian,
what?
Let's go ahead and thank a sponsor of this episode of Know How.
Who would that be?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe DigitalOcean.
Oh, right.
No. It is my choice. This is the best way to get an app, a service, basically anything that you can put into a container.
Minecraft server,
yes. Up and running in the cloud really, really quickly. Now, it's a different way to think of your data services. The old way would be if you wanted to get a server up. Let's say you wanted to put up an IRC server. You would buy a box. And you would put the box in a colo. And you would contract with an ISP to give bandwidth to your box.
If it was me and Alex, we would put an old PC in a closet and hope that it didn't burn down the house.
Exactly. But, you know, or burn down the data center.
Exactly.
And then you'd also have to hire someone on site, because occasionally when it goes wrong, you need remote hands to go out there and fix it. Yeah, you could still do that. That's okay, I guess. Or you could do it the smart way, by using DigitalOcean. Now, DigitalOcean uses droplets. It's a way to containerize, to encapsulate whatever service or app that you're running, a website, a virtual private server. It's all available because it's all encapsulatable. Now, DigitalOcean is used by over 600,000 developers, including Twitch's Randall Schwartz, Aaron Newcomb, and me. And yes, I have been playing with it to create my own custom Minecraft servers that can go up and down as necessary. You can deploy and configure your droplets via a streamlined control panel or a simple API. And you get to choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. You can select from one of the many pre-configured one-clicks like Drupal, Docker, Node.js to get up and running quickly. Or you could build the exact infrastructure the way that you need it, with root access to servers running 100% SSDs and state-of-the-art data centers around the world. Now, DigitalOcean is highly scalable to meet the demands of a rapidly growing application or business. You can use advanced features like floating IPs for high availability, private networking, and automated deployments via API. One of the things I really like, and I treasure this, is that DigitalOcean has an extremely active community. And this is how I tell whether or not a company is going to be around. If they have a vocal audience, if they have people who swear by the product and who are trying to help new users, you know that they're doing something right. And it's so easy to get started. You can deploy your SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to try the best way to put your project on the web. DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing, with servers starting at just $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available, starting at less than a penny per hour. But we're going to make it so that you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code KNOWHOW for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do for you. That's DigitalOcean.com, DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code KNOWHOW, KNOWHOW, in the billing section to get your free $10 credit. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of KNOWHOW. All right, Brian, you ready to get this puppy in the air?
Yes, please.
Well, what we need to do is we need to connect that to this, to my fantastic, my wonderful,
your very fancy control.
My super fancy, way fancier than yours. This is a FreeSky Tyrannus 9XD.
I just like that it looks like a robot face.
It really does, right? It's kind of smiling at me.
I love that. Take over the world.
But in order to make that work, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're going to have to hook up a PWM receiver to this flight controller, and we need to do it in a way that's not going to cost us a lot of weight or space inside the chassis.
Before you get to that, if we were going to do the ultra light build of this, how much more would it cost to get like the controller and
the right controller
and then eliminate the extra cables that you need? Like, how under the limit would you be, and then what would the cost be of that?
Okay, so if everyone wanted to get themselves a 9XD,
yeah,
along with the right flight controller and the right receiver, which would probably pull another 20 to 30 grams off the craft,
mm-hmm.
It would cost an additional $250 to $300 over what we've currently sunk into the project.
So we're talking like over a dollar a gram.
Yeah. It's doubling the price of the craft, basically.
But that would be the ultimate 150 racing drone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Although, well, if I was, that's why I chose this chassis. This chassis is a little easier. It's a bit more forgiving.
Yeah.
If I wanted an ultimate racing drone, actually, they're building one over at Hack 5. Darren does a great job with this. But if you wanted to build an ultimate, you would probably go more with what he has. But for example, our chassis is $10 and his chassis is like $50.
Okay, a little bit of a difference.
You know, three times more expensive.
Is his a 150 also?
It's also a 150. It's also under 250 grams. But, you know, he's put a bit more cost into it. I'm trying to make this sort of the first everyman's
budget. And if you've been following along with our other projects, this makes sense.
Yeah.
But we might have to have like a little race, though.
So. Well, if we're going to race him, I'm going to use my other 150.
You have an other 150?
I've made a...
You made a more premium 150?
I made the 150 I actually wanted.
Okay.
So that's a future episode of Know How. Okay. But let's not talk about that premium 150. Instead, Alex, why don't we show the good people how they're going to put their radio into Project FPV 150?
Now, it's time to connect your receiver to the flight controller. I'm using a FreeSky X8R, which unfortunately is a little bit big to just jam into the chassis. I could use one of my much smaller receivers, but again, we're doing it the hard way to help those with similar hardware setups. The first thing we need to do is to ditch the protective housing. It makes the receiver too bulky and adds unnecessary weight. Using a small flat screwdriver, I can pop open the case and reveal the actual receiver assembly. I'm going to mount the receiver underneath the top plate over the flight controller. However, I don't want to risk a short, so I'm going to use a 2.5-inch piece of 2-inch heat shrink tubing to insulate the receiver. Line up your receiver so that it fits over the flight controller, then use a piece of double-sided foam or a zip tie to secure the receiver to the top plate. Just as we did with the ESC leads, we're going to solder the receiver leads directly to the flight controller to remove the pins and save weight. We want at least 5 channels from our receiver into our controller, but we only need ground and voltage leads for a single channel. That set will provide power to the receiver from the flight controller, as well as giving us ground for all the other channels. Measure out your leads so that they can reach from the flight controller to the receiver pins, then cut, strip, and tin. We are using separated leads so that it gives us some flexibility with channel assignment. Remember that we only need one channel with all 3 pins connected between the receiver and the flight controller. Insert your tin leads from the bottom, solder up top, and as before, look for any cold solder joints or slag bridging. Once you're satisfied with your soldering, use a pair of snips to remove any excess wire from the top of the controller. Then, using nylon nuts, secure the flight controller to the nylon spacers. Connect your receiver leads to your receiver, then connect power to the craft to make sure that it all lights up. If it does, you're ready
to fly.
Ready to fly.
That was weird. Okay. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to show you now how this is actually going to tie up. We've gone ahead and tied down our flight controller. And actually, if you go to the overhead, Alex, we've got the receiver hooked up to the leads that we just soldered on.
Right.
And they are directly soldered. So there are no pins,
mm-hmm.
Which also means that they're not adjustable, at least not here. You can adjust it here, which is why I kept the pins on the receiver so that we can play. If I really, really wanted to eliminate weight, I could remove this entire pin header and solder directly to the board. But that's some pretty fine soldering, so be careful.
Yeah. And then if anything ever goes wrong, you won't be able to detach it very easily.
Right.
Yeah.
The other thing to notice is this. If you do have the FreeSky, this is what your receiver looks like. Mm-hmm. And if you take your receiver out of this case, it's tiny. So you're actually going to have an easier time at it than I did. This is pretty bulky. This only fit in one particular way. Mm-hmm. You could probably get this right above the flight controller, and you can get your leads down to next to nothing.
Can you take the pins off of this one, too?
Yes, you can. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that would be pretty rough, though.
It'd be rough, but again, you're saving yourself weight, and you're saving yourself space inside the chassis.
I guess it depends on how much of a project you want to make for yourself.
Precisely. All right, now here's what we need to do. We need to make sure that the leads that we just randomly connected to our receiver are sending the right signals to our flight controller. Luckily, we have a way to do that.
Welcome to OpenTX.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it talks to you, too.
It talks to me, yeah. That's my friend. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and hook up power, and I should get a steady light on the receiver when... Yep. Green light, so that means that the
green
receiver is linked up. Now, go to my computer, if you would, Alex, and you'll see under the receiver tab, it's showing me the inputs. So this is what I've got. And remember, again, I'm going to repeat this because it's a safety thing. Anytime you're doing this, no props, precisely.
Right.
All right, so this is my throttle. So I'm gonna manipulate the throttle, and you'll notice, okay, that's not doing throttle, that's doing pitch.
Okay. See how, so that means there's a cross. There's
that cable is on the wrong spot because right now, as I throttle up, the craft would pitch over. And let's see. Oh yeah, as I change the pitch, okay. So that's roll. That's right. And my pitch is controlling throttle. So
another reason maybe not to solder is if you solder the cables incorrectly.
That would be bad. You have to desolder to fix it. But in this particular case, we don't because I know that I've got a cross between my throttle and my pitch. So these two sticks are in the wrong position. So I'm just going to go to the overhead, Alex. I'm just going to swap the cables for throttle and pitch, and it should be back to normal if I can get that in there. These are a little tricky. This is why I use split leads, because if these were all the bulky three blocks, this would be a lot harder to do.
Right.
Okay, let's get in there. There we go. Okay, now go back to my screen, Alex. And this should be throttle. There we go. So I've got throttle, minimum throttle, all the way up to maximum throttle. And I've also got my pitch is not working. Okay, so it's not all the way in. Hold on. There we go. Oh, you know what? It helps if you actually connect it to the pin and not just to the thing underneath.
That's a pro tip.
Try that. Okay, go back. There we go. Okay, so now my pitch is wired in. Okay, something else that we need to do here, this is actually kind of important. Mm-hmm. Alex, if you go back to my my screen here, where is that? Sorry. Motor testing. This is going to determine where my ESC start and stop. You have to calibrate the ESCs. And the way that you do this, I'm going to power them up. You would set the master switch all the way up to the top.
Right.
And then plug a battery in, and then bring it all the way down to the bottom, and you'd hear it beep. In fact, let's do that right now.
Okay.
So, taking power off. Go back to the screen, Alex. Show the screen.
Telemetry loss.
There we go.
Telemetry
so I'm going to bring this all the way up. I'm going to connect, and you're going to hear it talk to me. See, it's...
Telemetry recovered.
Hear that?
Yeah, it's beeping.
Okay, and now bring it all the way down.
And so that's calibrating the
throttle. Now it's calibrated, right. So now it knows the maximum position and the minimum position. That's very important because otherwise your ESCs can start up in the wrong order and they can start up at the wrong time. All right, so let's test it out now.
Okay.
I've got myself a flight controller here that is responding, and I should be able to arm. There we go.
Okay. And so when you put the throttle up to the very top, it goes to 100%.
Yep. That's what we want.
Now, on the graph, it looks like the two middle ones are going...
Well, that's because the craft is slightly tilted on this table right now.
Ah, okay.
And so it's doing its best to try to fix the tilt,
to
which
level
it can't
itself.
Because there are no props.
Does it please you to see me suffer?
It's just spinning in vain. The other thing we want to do, and we talked about this, is we need to set our modes. Go ahead and go back to that. There we go. So this allows me to tell the flight controller what I wanted to do when I set certain conditions on my receivers. For example, switch one, I have set for this back switch right here. So, Alex, there you go. So this switch right here is switch one. So if you go to the mode screen, you'll notice how that switches back and forth, back and forth.
That's the arm.
Right. So now I have a hardware switch to arm. So
That's
when
cool.
it, when it's the default, in fact, That's what I like about this radio. This radio will not let me turn on the transmitter with the switches in the wrong position.
Okay.
It'll tell me a switch warning. So it has to be off, and then I have to physically do that to arm the craft.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good safety feature.
Yeah, and the other thing that I've done, and I didn't connect it because I wanted to save weight, but I can put a beeper on this so that if I switch it back off, it will beep every 5 seconds. So if I lose it up in a tree, I just disarm it, and it will start beeping for me.
Awesome.
Which is kind of a cool feature. The other thing that I've done is this. Alex, if you go ahead and go back to that screen, please. The screen. Thank you. This controls what kind of mode I'm going to be. So do I want it to be in sort of acrobatic? Do I want it to be in self-leveling mode? That's what sets that.
Definitely handy to have if you want to do some tricks.
Precisely.
Or so crash in a tree.
What I need to do now is I'm going to go ahead and button everything up. And all that requires is for me to put this back on like so. This is a little tricky because, again, we are dealing with a really cramped chassis. Right. There are 4 screws to secure this. I would normally use Loctite, but I'm not going to do that this time because...
This is for demonstration purposes.
This is for demonstration purposes. This craft is not actually ready to fly. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about that a little later because, you know, we need to do all of our pre-checks, just like we've done in previous projects.
I just want to fly.
Well, you know, I know. We like to fly, but we also don't want our first flight to be our last flight.
Which has happened before.
Yes.
On certain quads that I've flown.
Yes, it has.
it was like the Titanic's maiden voyage.
Precisely. We're going to go ahead and make sure that everything is balanced out properly. We're going to go ahead and make sure that our inputs are doing exactly what we expect them to do. And we're also going to have to dial in the PIDs a little bit.
Smart.
And the throttle curve, because this is a really light craft. You're going to find out it's crazy nimble. With so little weight, this thing can change direction on a dime. I mean, you boost the power on this, and it can go from full speed forward to full speed back in half a second.
Well, I just can't... I don't think you'd be able to have this project without FPV, because just trying to fly it around by sight would be... And there, it's good, it's gone. I'm not sure where it went.
I will say this. One of the updates, one of the upgrades that we are going to do for this project, and because people have been asking for it, is we are going to make this a capable line-of-sight flyer. So for the people who want to build this, but they don't really want to invest in FPV just yet, because FPV can be a little bit pricey, we're going to show them how you can add LEDs to this.
So that would help
locate it in the sky. And so I'm checking this, my rotation. This should go clockwise, counterclockwise. Mm-hmm. Always do that before you fasten, because nothing's funnier than a quadcopter that flips on its back the second you try to throttle up.
I don't know if funny is the word I would use.
Inevitable is the word I would use.
More like crying on the inside.
Yeah. Remember, I have the counter-threaded... spinners here.
Oh, nice.
Which is nice because it allows the props to actually tighten up as they spin versus loosening themselves in flight, which I know you also have experience with.
That was my fault of putting the washer on backwards, but it doesn't look like you have to put washers on these.
You don't, no. These props are so small, they don't require washers. But what I'm doing is I'm actually holding the nut with the plier, and then I'm spinning the motor body in the right direction to tighten these.
And just kind of hand tighten. Don't over tighten, I guess.
Yeah, you don't want to rip the threads out. Okay, so this is ready to go. What we're going to do is we're going to add a battery to it. I'm going to put the battery on the top right now, but in the finished configuration.
Probably on the bottom.
On the bottom, because the top is where the FPV transmitter is going to go. It's
right.
It's where the FPV antenna is going to go, and it's where I'm going to put these antennas, because I want to get them out of the way of the wire shredding propellers.
Right. Are you concerned about not having any landing gear for the ESCs that are on the bottom?
I am, but at the moment I just want to get in the air, so so the way it's set up right now, I'm actually landing on the ESCs, which is not ideal.
No. I guess you do have like the zip tie kind of there, which is some
Well, yeah, I mean, because, you know, you can crash as long as you've got a zip tie.
right. From my prior experience, that seems to be true.
Now, we haven't flown this yet, so I would take a step back, because I don't know if this is actually going to work. Yeah, maybe a little further back.
Is this a safety goggle moment?
Probably.
No, but you're not going to just wail on the throttle, right? All right.
You know me, right, Brian? All right, so arm. Okay, I hope. Okay, let's see.
Hey, it's spinning.
Oh, God.
Wow, that's actually not bad.
Ooh, it sounds angry. It's angry, Brian. It's angry. Okay, so the first thing I'm noticing is the throttle curve is so hard. It's like a tiny bit of throttle between uncontrollable and totally steady.
Why is it shaking so much?
It's shaking because I haven't balanced anything.
Oh, okay.
And three-bladed props, yeah, they don't particularly like being unbalanced.
Hi, Jay. It's looking at me funny.
Brian!
I think we got the point there, Padre.
Brian! It just wants to play.
That's not too shabby, though.
There we go.
Nice.
And?
Okay.
Okay, so it works. We understand that the airframe is sound. This will go into the air. Now what we need to do is we need to add the FPV gear,
right,
which will require a tiny bit more soldering. I've got a custom mount that I'm making out of foam because, as you notice, this thing does vibrate a little bit,
right,
as smaller craft are want to do. So I'm going to make sure that there's enough insulation around the FPV camera that I'm not getting the jello effect in my goggles, which is incredibly annoying.
Yes. Yeah. Cool.
But we're almost there.
So close. We're getting so close.
So close. Now, I will say this, people. We've got something planned for our next FPV 150 build, and it's not what you expect. We got two kits off of eBay because we also wanted you to be able to buy something incredibly inexpensively. So we bought $90 kits. I think they were like $90 kits.
Okay.
For FPV 150s. We're going to do a competitive build. We have exactly the same hardware. We'll have exactly the same amount of time. We'll have to do a set of challenges with our finished craft.
Okay.
And we're going to see if we can put our FPV where our mouth is.
I'm up for that. I mean, you're accustomed to losing, so it shouldn't be too big of a deal,
Catholic,
right?
So it's all good.
Yeah, right.
Well, folks, we'll see. We know that this has been a lot of information. We're going to make sure you get all the links. So if you want to know how to get base flight onto your Chrome, we're going to leave the link for that. If you want to know the parts list, you can go back a couple of episodes. We laid that all out. And we're also going to give you the link to the eBay kit that we bought. If you've been sitting on the fence because this was a little bit pricey, you want to start with something that's a little less expensive, a little easier to crash, then that's something that you can buy and build along with us during the competitive build.
And you can find all that at twit.tv/KH, and that's where all our past episodes are. And like Padre said, you'll need to go there to find our show notes and links, and there's handy buttons for downloading the version of video that you would like to, which I'm sure would be handy if you want to go back and rewind and watch some of the Padre's horrible soldering jobs over and over.
That was okay. You know what? I just realized something. When you have a really good close-up lens, it makes your soldering look even worse.
That's why during the video, I was asking Padre what camera he was using because it looked like the camera was great. You can really see the detail.
I needed to smear like Vaseline on the lens so that my soldering. Oh no, that looks good. It's very artistic.
Well, you need like a soldering filter that just kind of blurs things. Yeah.
Oh gosh, yeah. Seriously. Smitty would be very upset with me.
Well, when was the last time I showed any of my solder off? So I can't.
I was so tired. I was like, I don't care. Go.
Just get it done.
The worst part was because I looked at it later on, and when I was editing, I'm like, I got to go back and redo those. It was like really bad.
Yeah, that's because the camera's so nice that you can like really see the fine details of your work.
Folks, if you want to see fine details, don't forget that we also have a Google Plus group. Just go to Google Plus, look for the Know How group. We have almost 10,000 members.
That's right.
And it's a fantastic place. If you are a maker, if you're a DIYer, if you just want to be with people who make and do it themselves,
that's the
place to go. If you have questions and if you have projects, we're bringing in feedback again in the next episode, along with some parting shots that show off projects that people have built. We love when you outdo us. We love when you figure out projects better than we have.
Love is a strong word, Padre.
I love it. I love it. Brian hates you, but that's the kind of love I
have. I can appreciate the work that goes into it.
I love it. I love it. But no, please show it off because we want to show off your work. It's the closest thing I'll ever have to kids.
That is true.
You're my kids.
But there's a lot of people that still call you father. So.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Don't forget also, that's not the only place you can find us on the socials. You can find us on the Twitters. I'm twitter.com/PadreSJ.
And I am at @cranky_hippo.
And our director is at ANELF3. His name is Alex Gumpel. Wait.
Whoa, you said it right.
Whoa.
Did you?
Excuse me, Padre. Oh, no, you're right.
Oh. No, Grumple. Okay, thank you. Yeah, follow us, and you'll find out what we're going to be doing on future episodes of Know How. We've got a lot of stuff planned.
Yes.
We've got a lot of episodes we have to pre-record because of events.
Somebody's going to Hawaii.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
And events. Yeah, events. GDC. We just did.
GDC, Comic-Con. We're doing a bunch of stuff with Arduino. We're doing a bunch of stuff with Raspberry Pi.
Right. And then NAB. I don't know if that's the next thing in line, but we're going to be doing shows from there.
Yeah, so if you want to know anything about podcasting, we're actually going to be doing specials from NAB with equipment manufacturers that can help you do just that.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballister.
I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how,
go build it. Try and kill your coworkers.